Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
The Mole Season 1, Episode 2 is over and has been for a long time, but I believe Steven is still trapped in the Iron Maiden somewhere in Monaco. Or is it Cannes? Either way, we've got a can-do attitude here as we're talking about the Mole. It's Mole Patrol. Hello, everybody. This is the Mole Rewatch / First Watch. Spoiler-free, because I've never seen the show before. First run for me. Second run for my wonderful co-hosts. First up, it's the amazing Brooklyn Zed. Zed? Nice to see you outside of the helmet. I'm glad that we got to you in time to unlock you onto the podcast.
I am happy to be here.
Yeah. Up next, we have the wonderful Jessica Lease. And Jess, I just have some questions about why you were running away from the microphone at the start of this thing. I was going to introduce you before Zed, but you were running in the full opposite direction, a full sprint. Just feels like you're really trying to sabotage the order of things here.
But you guys told me that I was supposed to meet you on the other StreamYard, so I was just going to that one.
This isn't Sequester. This is the Mole. This is the Mole. There's the one StreamYard, and that's it. And you don't get to watch it unless you are me, Jess, or Zed, because we're the only ones with access to the video.
Thank God.
It's us and the $75,000 patrons.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Us and the $75,000 patrons, which is money that is being slowly ripped away from the Mole crew here in season one of the Mole in what can only be described as a disastrous hour of TV for the crew. Zed, I didn't know that they were just going to like blow this thing up. These guys, that's a disaster left and right.
Yeah, it's not going so well, is it? Overall.
Yeah, we could apply that to the Mole, to life. There are so many ways in which we can parse that out. We're talking about season one, episode two. It's spoiler free because I've never seen it. You both are keeping the spoilers under lock and key, much like Steven is currently under lock and key. If you've got any questions, any feedback, you can send it our way. MolePatrol@robhaswebsite.com. And I know we are still in the process of working on getting our mole specific feed ready for you. If it is not ready already, I would expect robhaswebsite.com/molepatrol will be the way to get there. We gave all the rules last week, Jess, in terms of where to watch this thing. I believe it was on YouTube.
Yes, indeed. It was on the YouTube, and it's not hard to find, guys. You can just go into YouTube and
search. Getting that kind of feedback?
People yes. Saying,
well, really? we're getting two different kinds of feedback.
I have
now.
Everything muted out, so you're both on the front lines of the feedback.
We're getting a lot of, where can we watch this? We're getting a couple of people that didn't realize until this week that this podcast was happening and suggested that somebody do it. And we also get a bunch of people that are like, hey, if you guys are having trouble watching The Mole, here's a link. And then they send a link to the YouTube thing that you can literally get by going to YouTube and typing The Mole Season 1 in the search box.
But I appreciate anyone who's trying to help in these troubling times, you know?
I guess so. It's not misguided.
Is it not the thought that counts in the end?
I suppose it's the thought that counts.
I do want to shout out the fellow patrons in the patron group who are doing emotional labor I do not have the energy for in responding to people who are asking, where do I watch The Mole? Because the link is in the show notes, as we said at the beginning and end of the last episode. If you are listening to this podcast, the link is in the show notes, or Google the Mole. Well, not Google, but whatever it is.
Don't Google it if you don't want to.
You can probably Google it too, and it'll come up as a YouTube link.
Yeah, but
it's in the video tab.
I'm never Googling The Mole until this full journey is done. So I'll Google The Mole in 17 years when I've watched all of The Mole.
Well, that's a pessimistic outlook on our journey.
I know we talked last week about are we gonna do The Mole past season one? And I will say, in my field of journalism, we often say three's a trend, right? Mm-hmm. We're two episodes deep now, and two just absolute knee slappers of episodes. What a time here on The Mole we're having. Except this one was like the Everybody Sucks episode, which was great. Super, super fun to watch everybody just be awful at The Mole.
So here's the amazing thing. We are two episodes into this, and when I think back, like my dim memories of The Mole when it was on the first time, I have three very distinct things that I remember about that kind of are like the iconic Mole moments. And we're going to kind of shoot our iconic Mole wad, or at least 66% of it, this week and next week.
Yo!
That's our hashtag. Yeah. So
I mean, that is iconic indeed.
I can't believe.
Jess!
We're going there. We're going there. So this week, we have a moment, and we'll get to it, that is, in my head, it was like, this is what The Mole is all about. And then next week, we have another moment that's just, this is what The Mole is all about. And that's two of the three. And the third, we don't get to until almost the end of season two. But
okay.
I can't believe like all of the really great Mole stuff is so stacked in the front end of season one.
Is it shooting the fake Cartier watch into an exploding cloud of gack?
It is adjacent to that, yes.
Okay, great. Because that was legendary. That was tremendous.
Yes.
Is it Andy Koops eating a baguette?
Yes, it is.
That is one of my absolute favorite things about this series, period, that I think I referenced in our preview podcast.
Yeah. Yep.
Of Anderson just like around town.
Yeah.
Sipping espresso, eating a baguette, lounging on the stairs, Andy's whatever meant. It is, yeah. Eating maraschino cherries, mm-hmm. You know, as you do.
The best part is he's just got like a mouthful of bread while he's like watching people go by. He's like, rawr, rawr, rawr. And it's just fabulous. And it's something Phil Kogan rips this off for Amazing Race in the latter seasons.
Yeah. Imitation, the sincerest form of flattery is what I hear, which is why all the other Mole podcasts should be flattered that we are out here imitating.
That's right.
No, it was tremendous. Lots of great Andy Koops moments beginning right away, because I think this is the first episode that has like what will be, I assume, like the introduction for the for each episode, which is just like a small army of Andy Koops, like with his arms crossed, telling us the rules to The Mole on like a full white screen. It's like he's in the Matrix and we're Neo, and he's just like, I don't remember which pill you take, but we've taken one of them and we're like,
this is our reality now.
No, it's like if he was Malkovich and we went into Malkovich's head.
Yeah. Andy Koops. So we're like deep in Anderson Cooper land. And there's we'll get to him. There's so many incredible Andy Koops moments in this episode. You know, previously on, really the big takeaway from the previously on is, justice for Manuel. Jim says, I wanted Manuel to win if it wasn't going to be me. It's like, I don't need to be reminded of Manuel. My heart can't take it. I would rather just forget that he was there and move on, because I'll be sad if I think about him for too long.
It's so unfortunate that he died last episode.
He died.
He was executed. They execute them. Multiple people were effectively executed in this episode. This is a dangerous episode of television, Zed. You have people being locked away in prison.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
People being hunted down in a hedge maze.
It's stressful. I can't imagine running through a maze in the dark, knowing there are two people chasing me. I am a short, asthmatic human being. I am not built for running.
Yeah.
And I do not want anyone chasing me under any circumstances. Like, and that's a little too real right now. Also, not the corn maze part, but just the being chased part.
Would you both believe me if I told you that I'm a decent sprinter? Short burst running fairly fast. Is that true or false?
That would be surprising to me.
Now, Jess, my follow up question is true or false. Josh Wigworth believes that he's a pretty fast sprinter.
Okay. I guess fast is kind of relative, isn't it?
Good in a quick burst, then like past 30 seconds and apply that to whatever you want to apply it.
That
to.
Is all good right. To know if we are ever chased by a bear.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's obviously go save yourselves. It's over for me. If we're being chased by bears, I'm done. It's over for me. All right. So we begin the episode with the recap that Manuel, I can't say Manuel.
There's no world where that's right. I don't care how many people said it on television, including Anderson Cooper, noted journalist and host of this television program. That's not correct.
Yeah. Children are not in my imminent future, but if they were, I think I would go handbook and guide. Handbook and guide Wiggler.
I like it. They go together. So you're planning on having twins.
Yes. Yes. A voodoo priest once told Emily that she would have twins. We call our kitty cats the twins. We're hoping that was the fulfillment of the prophecy.
I feel like handbook and guide are better names for cats than humans.
They probably are. Handbook and guide are good names for humans if I'm a Scientologist.
That's true.
Like a froofy Hollywood Scientologist.
Yeah.
Like Shipwheel. This is Shipwheel Wiggler. This is my daughter brochure. All right. So
where are we going?
I'm trying to get us back on track, Zed. I apologize. All of like the filibustering that you hear on a podcast, Zed can now attest to. It's not edited out. We just leave it all in. It all just stays. We just leave it where it lies on the floor. Begins with everybody's like giving some confessionals, and Jim is going to give us bless me camera for I have sinned, which is
so good. So
very,
good.
Very good. I like Jim a lot. He's super, super fun. This is a big Jennifer episode. Jennifer at the heart of a lot of action here. She and Jim are tight. She says Jim is a neat person. So some shades of Monica Culpepper there.
Lady.
Yeah. What's best for Jennifer? So at breakfast, where it's breakfast time, or is it dinner? I think at first Charlie is still saying like I can't eliminate anyone from the running of who's the mole. Jennifer has a camera. Does everybody just like someone get elected to have a camcorder at meals randomly, or were they all given camcorders?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this is a one-time thing. Of
I don't remember it ever happening.
Jennifer happens to have a video camera. It's not a recurring trope.
Well, it
I think she
been.
Just like I think she just took it. She's like, give me that. I'm gonna
hey you, give me that. Yeah.
Also, remember this is in the era before GoPros were a big thing. So she's got like a whole ass camera up on her shoulder when she's running around like this.
Yeah, the difference between personal video cameras and professional video cameras were not that huge in size at that point in time.
No, there's a lot of fancy camera work here in this episode of The Mole. We'll get through it. All right, 2:30 in the morning, shenanigans occur. Steven is kidnapped by operatives. Andy Koops tells us it's nighttime and our operatives are going to work. And we see these dastardly foes, like these people who would just be like lackeys in an action movie who Schwarzenegger would lay to waste, showing up in ski masks, busting into Steven's room and yanking Steven out of his room. They tie him up and bring him outside. This is stressful.
Yeah, in my head, I'm kind of picturing like this could have gone a different way. Like, what is this? Like, what if it's like a Tropic Thunder scenario where he was really kidnapped and everybody just assumes it's part of the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is dangerous circumstances could occur around the mole. This is a treacherous show.
I assume off camera they were like, okay, like don't freak out. He's not really kidnapped. This is a bit.
Now, Zed, I believe that we have reached consensus that the audience for the Mole Patrol we're referring to as the Mole People.
Yes, and that is thanks to my biggest stan on Twitter. Came up with the name of the Mole People.
And you're not just humble bragging. You are
no, literally that's their name on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah. It's remarkable, Zed. You've done two podcast episodes. You already have a stan account.
I have a growing empire. Yeah. Completely not on purpose at all. Watch out, Mr. Nino. Survive over here.
Watch out, Zed's coming. You better be ready. but I say that because like we need to come up with a name for the mole. People that are working, quote unquote, working for us. Who is that? Who are these people? Who are the Andy Koops minions?
They're like the hench moles.
Yeah, the hench
moles. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, the hench moles for sure. So the hench moles abduct Steven. The next morning, everyone's at breakfast. They're like, where is Steven? And Jim's like, I have to tell you all something. I'm pretty sure Steven's been kidnapped. I heard a ruckus late last night. So at 8:20 a.m. they go looking for Steven. They're like, yeah, Steven's gone. And they get a phone call, and it's Andy Koops, who is unbelievable here. As Andy Koops is like on a pier, right? He's on some pier, and he says, hope y'all got some sleep. You may have noticed Steven is missing. He tells him you have to find him. They have to use this envelope that's been addressed to Steven to find Andy Koops' location. And then he says, and this is among my favorite lines of television in 2020, even though it's from the early 2000s, I suggest you hurry. Steven is rather uncomfortable. And then we cut to Steven being put into an Iron Maiden. They're locking him up in an Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the full Iron Maiden.
It's just the helmet, but it's
just, and this is, of course, a reference to an actual historical event.
Right. The Jim Caviezel movie. No, that's the Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
Ah, yes, yes. Emily Fox has been really imploring me to watch The Man in the Iron Mask recently. Maybe I should watch it before next week's Mole Patrol so I can report back on
it.
Yeah, what was like the veracity of replicating that experience?
Well, we're sure not going to get you to read the book.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not. Definitely not. I don't know how to read. We don't. There's no shade when it's that accurate. If you make it an audiobook, I'm currently crushing some Stephen King.
Have you started Watership Down?
Yeah. Yeah. I got 5 chapters into it, which is about 13 pages or so. I'm having trouble. Okay.
I read 50 pages of The New Jim Crow yesterday.
Wow. Yeah.
I read a whole ass book yesterday.
Okay.
I audio read The Stand as an audiobook over the course of about 3 days last week or 2 weeks ago.
Did you not sleep? Because I feel like The Stand is going to be 36 hours as an audiobook.
No, I slept, but I listened to it on double speed.
Ah, there you go.
Because I listen to podcasts on double speed.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, I can digest the information that way.
And yeah, it freaks out my parents, by the way. I listen to my podcast on double speed, like, yes, without the headphones, and my mom comes in, and she's like, why are these people talking so fast?
Yes, I was out visiting my family. My brother and his wife have been living with my parents over the last few weeks. And my brother's favorite book series is the Dark Tower series. So I'm reading it for the first time to be able to connect with him even more. And when I was, I crashed on the couch when I went out to visit them, and I played for him how I'm listening to the audiobook, and it was on double speed. And he's like, you're a lunatic. You're an insane person. I'm like, I can process it this way. So Watership Down, if it's a good audiobook, somebody tell me. I'll read Watership Down.
I mean, there's a movie of that too.
It kind of like the ship has sailed on,
no, I,
on
it's still
the Watership Down podcast.
I'll tell you what, Down the Hatch is going to have a second book club podcast sooner than Watership Down gets read by me.
That's so, not remotely surprising.
Some programming.
Are you
going
to read all of Charles Dickens? Like
no, that's the last book I'm ever going to read in my life. Okay. We're way off base.
Wow. Yeah, what we need to talk about.
We're not doing well.
Steven's been locked up. Steven's in jail. Steven's been imprisoned. He's got an iron mask on his face. He's rather uncomfortable.
It is wild to me that they did that to a person.
Yes.
Even if they only did it for like the camera shots and not for the actual several hours, it is still crazy to me that they did that to a person.
And wild. You have to imagine that the entire kidnapping aspect of it, they must have like gently knocked on his door and like gone into the room and said, okay, Steven, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set up the shots. Some guys in masks are going to come get you.
Yep.
Like, there's no way they yanked him from sleep at 2:30 in the morning.
Unacceptable.
I want to believe, though. I want to believe in the danger of the mole. So Steven's been taken hostage by, quote unquote, some very unsavory characters. While you were having a leisurely breakfast, again, those are the quotes, he was busy getting tied up by us. So Steven gets on the phone. He gives them some details. I don't even know why this is in the show. Yeah, I drove for 45 minutes. We went to a toll booth. Whatever, man. Stay on track. No one cares. And like, even Andy Koops, like, to add to the drama, like, stops this video they're watching early. There was zero useful information in
a cute
that.
Little tiny portable DVD player.
Wow, what a throwback. What a throwback. That was very nostalgic.
That was cutting edge at the time. Like, people barely had DVDs back
then.
Yeah,
explain to the children who are not listening to this podcast, who all have DVD players in their cars now, that was not a thing.
Yeah, you had like a tiny little box. It had like a flip screen, and you could play little CD, DVD things in it. And it was like the coolest thing. And if you had one, like, you were an elite human.
Yeah.
It was like an iPad, except you had to put media into it.
Yeah. Remember when you had to put media into things?
I frequently think about that, like, explaining to someone who is, I don't know, even 15 years old now, that when I was their age, a telephone, camera, a music player, and like a video player were four separate digital
devices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm only 30.
Yeah. A lot's changed.
It's true.
They give the crew 30 seconds to speak with Steven, but I call bullshit because they waste 3 seconds. The clock starts and they slowly waste 3 seconds getting the phone to Steven. Steven stumbles 10%, using the phone because he's
10% of the time.
He's got this horrible mask on his face, so he can't process what's happening. So he's trying to like hold it up. And it's not until the 20-second mark that Jim is able to get a word in edgewise. So they really only give them 20 seconds for Steven to be like, yeah, I'm on Earth, is basically the extent of the clues he gives. Like, I'm somewhere on the planet.
I can see water.
There's a mountain. There's terrain. There's some
it's
hotels.
Like trying to watch. It's like watching somebody try to phone a friend on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You brought it up. Don't forget.
I brought it up. I didn't have phone a friend. So
okay,
if I had it, we would be having a different conversation.
Would we be talking or would you be big timing us?
I'd be big timing you.
Yeah,
I would own the podcast network.
You
like
and Anderson Cooper would be best friends.
Yes. Though. Yes. I like
are you insinuating we're not?
No, that's fair. That's totally fair. He's going to be on this podcast any day now.
He's going to come on the podcast. We're going to get that to happen, especially after he knows that I utter such classy phrases as iconic bowl wand.
Again, you brought it up. We didn't bring it up. Disavow.
I'm introducing some very weird energy to the podcast today.
Some things are happening. Meanwhile, at Steven's prison, which it's officially called, according to the Chiron, Steven's prison. This is where Leonardo DiCaprio was imprisoned with the helmet. The man in the iron mask died here, says Andy Koops. Hopefully, Steven will not.
Because then we wouldn't have a show.
There's also a sign. I think there's like a shot of a sign with like prisons and an arrow. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Multiple
sounds
ones. Right.
Yeah. What is happening?
Text from Emily Fox. Why are you mentioning my husband's name? Sorry, we're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio. Leonardo DiCaprio, the only human on Earth, Emily says she will leave me for. Fair enough.
He's on the list.
He's on the. He's the list.
He's the hall pass list.
He's the hall pass. He's the list.
To be fair, the chances of that happening are probably higher than anybody on my list because my list has Anderson Cooper on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not quite the right tree. Yeah,
I know.
Way.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully, I have nothing else to report on this matter. Moving forward through life. Meanwhile, we got to split everybody up into teams. We've got 2 hours to find Steven. We got to split everybody up into rescue vehicles. There's the helicopter. There's the boat. There's the van. You can call Steven because they have phones in prison. In Steven's prison, they have a phone installed, which is separate from the music and DVD players. And if you call him, though, you lose $5,000 from the
prison
pot.
Phone calls are expensive. That is real and true now, still today.
Add it to the list.
I wasn't going to bring politics into a podcast. You are wrong.
Yep. Add it to the list of shit that is wrong with our criminal justice system.
That's true, though. Like it sounds like a joke because it wouldn't cost $5,000, but prison phone calls are expensive. DM me if you want to talk about it. I will yell about politics all day, every day.
How expensive? How expensive?
Like, it can be dollars on the minute.
That's terrible. Yeah. That's awful.
That's a whole other thing. I will happily talk to you about politics. I will educate you if you need educating about whatever the thing is.
Slide into those DMs. Right. Hard rock.
Slide into the DMs. I was informed my DMs were closed. Of course they were. My security on all of my everything is very high. I am very paranoid about the government. It's not paranoia. It's real. Yes. My DMs are now open. If DMs you want to talk to me about nonsense going on in our government and our prison industrial complex, I am here to talk about those things. Anyway, we have fake locked up a human being in a real prison in Monaco 20 years ago.
It is not even freaking Monaco. I have a question.
Right. Yeah.
So when Steven says they put an iron mask on me, why didn't any of these Yahoos register? And granted, this is before you Googled every single thing as it came up, but I really feel like somebody should have been like, huh, I saw that movie or I read that book and maybe he's in that place.
Yeah, no Leo DiCap stands among the mole cast, I assume.
I mean, when I think the movie come out? It was not out yet. Oh, I think.
You sure about that? All right, Nope, you're wrong. The Man in the Iron Mask, 1998.
Okay, so they could
see like it had to be like a relatively recent, like.
And I feel like the odds are relatively high that you know that, because isn't there not one but two Leo DiCaps in The Man in the Iron Mask?
Well, one of them is in The Iron Mask and one of them is the king.
Is that a spoiler? Did we just spoil it?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I feel like this is because this is also like based on history and you can't spoil history.
You can if you don't know history, right? Right?
I guess, but
if you don't know the history, spoilers, right?
The one thing that I was doing, like, as I was ferociously Googling to see if, like, this was a plausible thing somebody could have done at the time, is I realized that the Man in the Iron Mask wasn't just in one prison. So, like, he died in the one in Cannes, but he was in the Bastille, for instance, and he was in a bunch of other places. So it's like, I guess you wouldn't necessarily be able to say, okay, he's in the prison where he was.
They should have put that in the disclaimer at the end of the episode that they lied to us. About
they lie to us all the time. It's television.
All right, so three teams: Jennifer and Henry and the helicopter team. They get to the chopper. Jennifer does not want to be in there. She's demanding that we land, according to Henry, because she is airsick. There's the boat squad. Kate, Wendy, and Charlie are rocking the boat, and then in the van it's Afi, Catherine, and Jim, and shenanigans ensue.
I already call shenanigans.
Yeah.
And maybe this is something I think maybe if I were the mole, I would be angling to have these things happen. That's not a spoiler comment, by the way.
Yeah, sure, sure.
This is just something I was thinking about, like, vis-a-vis if I was ever the mole. Why wasn't Jim on the helicopter? He's a pilot.
Right, correct.
That's question number one. Question number two, why are we putting Jen and Henry together when they already hate each other?
That's right. And they've had conflict.
So they've already had conflict, and they're going to have more.
Do we think that these are producer decisions, or were these choices left in the hands of the players?
I think they have to decide because, I mean, they have later on, they have, like, in the maze challenge, they have to decide who's going to be in which group.
Right. Right.
Yeah. They're usually better about showing you, okay, I need you to divide into three teams, this, and this. And
this is the deliberation process.
Even if it's kind of like hidden what the reality of those teams mean. It's like, you know, you need a smart and a dumb team, or you need a team that with good eyes and the team with whatever.
Right. Really no qualifications to these splits. Yeah. Yeah. Jennifer and Henry being together is odd. That doesn't track for me. And then Afi, Catherine, and Jim, I guess they are a well-oiled machine based on last week. And that just sort of leaves Kate and Wendy and Charlie to be on the boat. And they don't have much of a working relationship, especially because Wendy and Charlie have kind of this odd relationship. So it's going to take them a long time to figure out. We've got a restaurant menu that might mean something. They burn $5,000 on calling Stephen in prison. Say, hey, can you hear a helicopter? He's like, I can't hear you because of the helicopter, which is a great moment. But no, they're not quite on it. They're trying to find him. Afi and Catherine split up from Jim. Jim takes the Scoob mobile to I don't know where. And then Henry calls everybody, be like, hey, we got to land. Jennifer's going to throw up on the helicopter. And Jennifer's like, I'm not going to do that. Why are you saying that I'm demanding that we land? Yeah. Lots of infighting still between Henry and Jennifer. This is just the start of it in this episode.
Yeah. And the conversations they have are like, one of them will say something totally reasonable and the other one will just like blow it up out into everything. And it's happened a couple of different times with both of them doing that, where one of them's like, well, I think we should go that way. And it's like, how dare you say that I'm insinuating that we should not go that way? And they just like, they hate each other on sight.
The search for the mole will resume after a quick word from our sponsors. And now we're back to resume the patrol. They have 42 minutes left on the clock when they realize that they all have this shared brochure. My future child. They have a brochure for a restaurant that is in the city of Khan. And so we got 42 minutes to rush to Khan, which is 30 minutes away. And at this point, if it was Jack Bauer, I would believe this was solvable. Because this is reality, I at this point believe that Steven is going to remain in the Iron Mask for the rest of his days. So they go off and they race. And like all of the particulars are very, very specific of like, all right, well, here's what's going to have to happen. The car crew and the boat crew, you guys have to get together. You've got three vehicles. You have three keys. You all have to be on the island at the same time. I think at this point, there's like 13 minutes left on the clock. It's like, there's no way they're going to organize in order to do this. Steven's done.
I love that they're running around the fort screaming, Steve, Steve. It's like a huge fort. And how are they supposed to, like, how is he supposed to hear them?
Yeah.
In his Iron Mask.
There's multiple prisons.
And the multiple prisons.
Should I invest in a wombat's mask?
Foiled by the prison industrial complex. Sorry, I can't.
No. Be okay. Yourself.
Yep.
Apologize for nothing. For.
I am unapologetic about who I am.
You are not on a podcast with anyone who disagrees with you. So you're good.
I know, and I appreciate that.
You're good. You're in good company. They get there and Steve is like, please help me. Here's my stupid green flag. I am here.
Wait. I have watched this clip so many times because I watched the video. Like, I watched this episode when I watched several episodes when we were talking about doing this podcast. I watched this episode several days ago in anticipation of this podcast. And then I watched it again today because my brain is not functioning and I was trying to remember anything about what happened.
Yeah.
I have paused and like frame by frame tried to see this flag that they're ostensibly showing us in this shot from the helicopter. It is not there. I don't know what they're looking at or what they're showing us. I mean, maybe from the helicopter, they saw the flag, but what they're showing us on the video, there is no flag there. I don't know what they're seeing. I don't know where they are or what they're looking at, but I have tried really hard to
find
this flag waving out a window, and I don't believe it.
Some movie making magic, some trickery. They should have added that in the disclaimer as well. Well, Steven was in one room that was ocean facing. And then when they found him, we snuck him into a different room.
This team got close enough, so we were like, yeah, you're basically here.
Yeah. Yes, I don't know. He's got the mask. He's waving it. Everybody starts to get close to showing up. Jennifer and Henry are there first. And Jennifer says, I'm going to intercept everybody. And she runs to the heliport or she runs to the dock. Either way, she runs to the wrong place.
To the heliport, I think.
Yeah, she runs to the wrong place.
Because the van is now in the boat. The van team is in the boat, and the boat is going to go to the dock. The heliport went to the heliport because it's the heliport. The helicopter.
Yes.
I'm tired. The helicopter went to the heliport, and they need to meet the boat, which has both the boat team and the van team. But Jen goes back to where they docked the helicopter, not where the boat was gonna land.
Yeah, and Henry's like, she's running the wrong way. Did I say something? Should I tell her that she's not going in the right direction? Henry doesn't say anything.
I don't understand why he kept the radio. He's in the right place. He is like the one person who doesn't need the radio. If you're sending somebody else out by themselves with no cell phone, Zoomers, cell phone.
None. There's no other way of contact. Even the old-fashioned way, Zed, of bellowing doesn't work. Can't even successfully bellow for Jennifer.
It's true.
Everyone starts screaming, Jen, where are you? As poor Jim has he's run almost as fast as I could have run uphill to get to Henry. He's got the key. And everyone's sweating bullets. And Jen is nowhere. And then poor Jen shows up like 4.5 minutes late. She's like, I'm back. All right, let's do this. We got this. We're like, yeah, we failed 5 minutes ago. Test failed is what it says when you screw up on the mole, apparently. There goes $50,000 down the drain.
I will say this is something that Anderson is not very good at.
Yeah.
Is he's really good when he's making fun of people. But when he legitimately has to pretend he is disappointed in them for failing at a task, he can't do it. he's good at celebrating with them. He's good at making fun of them for being stupid. Mm-hmm. But if he has to be like, yes, we took a bunch of money out of the pot because you broke these rules, and he has to be serious about it, he's very wooden when
he's
does
like
that.
In the giggle fit almost from
almost. He's like, yeah. He's like 2 seconds from the giggle fit because he just wants to be like, yeah, you guys suck.
There's a lot of animosity between Henry and Jennifer here in this moment. They're just like, Jen is like defending herself. She's like, I took the shortcut. And Henry's like, oh, it's interesting that you know this island so well that you know which shortcuts to take. She's like, yeah, it's called being observant, guy. I was observing the route. And they're fighting as Henry is just like literally sitting on his tower looking down at Jennifer there. And all of this, and everybody else is just so tired and bummed from losing. And Steven is just sick to death of being in the stupid iron mask.
Can I get out?
Just interject one point? Get me out of here. Let me out.
Yeah, already failed.
Yeah, failed. We lost. Let's
you don't need to yell at each other about
it. I did my part. So I'm pretty sure Steven's the mole and a telepath, and that he used his telepathic powers to sabotage everybody. And they were just empowered, those powers, by the existence of the Iron Mask. No spoilers.
So why was Steven the person they picked to kidnap? Is it because he's a cop and he'd be too good at this?
Well, I actually did have a question and only answered if you think it's safe to answer. I'll see if I can phrase the observation in a way that isn't a question so that you can just respond however you'd like. And the observation was, I wonder if the what's the mechanism for picking somebody for a situation like this on behalf of the show? Where do they literally like pick a name out of a hat, or can they pick someone with agency? So like, would production be incentivized to pick the mole to like yank out of the ecosystem for a little while and just watch everybody else self-destruct while the unstable element is actually stabilized somewhere else? Or also, is it possible? I know that you said Andy Koops doesn't know who the mole is. Obviously, somebody in the ABC universe knows who the mole is. But do like the camera people, do some of the producers, do some of these decision makers on the ground, do they not know who the mole is? And so they may have picked Steven, who could be the mole, without knowing that he's the mole. So these are some of the things that I was thinking about during all of the hijinks.
It's a good thought, Josh. And I will say that there are many challenges coming up where one person is singled out to play a role and separated from the rest of the group. And it happens many times, and it's usually it's a different person every time.
Okay.
So there are many, I think it's a mechanism of the game to split people into smaller groups for almost everything they do.
Yeah.
And I think in this one instance, it feels like maybe the choice was a little bit more production thinking about, well, who is going to be the biggest asset here? And can we remove them to make the challenge
the undercover
harder?
Operative.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I think that I'm going to say everybody on the production team knows who the mole is. The cameramen probably don't necessarily.
Okay.
I also want to bring up from our feedback while we're talking about this, Monica McGee, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, it's spelled weird, had asked us, actually asked in the Facebook group, and I was like, please send this in an email because I will not remember.
Yes.
Does the mole get information about the challenges ahead of time, and can he or she, I would say, can they?
Yeah.
Can they plan how to sabotage it? And the answer in most instances is yes. I think that the mole is working directly with production, frequently has ahead of time knowledge of what the challenge is going to be, or knows at least what would be the ideal position to be in or what team to be on in a challenge to best sabotage, but they're not necessarily automatically put on that team or put in that position. It definitely involves them using their social skills and their social game to say, I would like to do this thing in whatever means best places them in that position. Jess, does that sound right to you?
I think that sounds right. I don't think the mole necessarily gets a ton of information ahead of time. I think that's just kind of up to them. They're given what they have. Occasionally production slips them something, but usually they're just kind of in the moment and it's up to them to decide how they're going to screw up.
Okay. All right. So TBD on why Steven was picked. But Steven did his job. Everybody else screwed up. Steven dutifully wore that iron mask and just chilled for a full day in it. What a tough gig. That sucks.
They must have let him take it off when the camera was not on him.
I don't want to believe that that's true.
I think they took 10 minutes and he had the mask on and they're like, okay, now, Steve, now act stressed out. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Steve.
Lay down on the cot.
Yeah. Yeah. Now pace back and forth and say, why are they taking so long?
That must have been a great day of shooting.
And how do we even know that's Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like back at the craft services.
Yeah. Stunt double for sure. All right. So they failed. Test failed. First of two test failures this week. So test failed. Andy Koops the next day is going to come to them. They've got two other assignments. They don't know that they've got two tests. All they know is they need to divide up into three crews, the leaders, the followers, and the eyes. Who's got the good eyes? Who's good at leading, who's good at following, and who's got great vision? I should not be part of that crew if it were me. But I think that that would have been misleading because maybe I would have been decent at discerning which Cartier watch is real and which one is phony. As a big Cartier watch stan, I feel like this was the reality TV show competition made specifically for me.
This was very Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. If you looked at the two watches, you just pick the humbler looking grail, and that's mm-hmm. the real one.
Yeah. Right now in Animal Crossing, which is the game I'm obsessively playing in order to maintain some semblance of mental health, which is slow going these days, you have a fox, a humanoid fox named Red, who shows up to your island once a week with a boat filled with art. You can buy only one piece of art from the boat. There are no refunds. And of the four items for sale, only one of them is authentic. Only one of them is the genuine article. And the ways that you tell the art is real or fake, very, 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 very impossible, subtle distinctions between the fake art and the real art. So it's very challenging. This is a hard challenge, is what I'm trying to express. Also, that I'm playing Animal Crossing, and if you'd like to come visit my island, let me know. My island is a sequel to Lost.
That's very on brand, Josh.
It's very good. I'm really proud of it. I've put a lot of effort into it. I hope you enjoy it if you choose to come check out my island. All right, so they have to determine one watch is real, one watch is fake. If you're right, if you pick the right watch, then you're going to earn $20,000. If you're wrong, you will lose $20,000 from your pot. Not only that, we're going to destroy the watch that you choose. And not only that, we're going to snipe it from a distance. We're going to set up a shooter from across the way who's going to literally take a hit out on one of these poor watches. It's amazing.
Yep, and that watch is full of gack.
It's full of gack. Mark Summers is somewhere being like, "Hey, that's our gig."
So could you tell which watch is real by like holding it up to your ear and shaking it, and the one that goes that's the fake one?
I don't know. This is one of those challenges that, like, I'm glad for all of, like, the interpersonal dynamics and the fact that, like, some fun stuff happens where like they go into town. Anderson Cooper is just
this is the best. This is iconic.
He's just hanging out, just posing, you know, eating baguettes. It seems like he ate like half a dozen baguettes in the time that this was shot. Like, there's one point where he's definitely eating like a Danish. Like, he's got some sort of like filled baked good in addition to the baguette that he is eating. And he's just trolling everybody because it's Henry, Catherine, and Kate in this group. And he keeps trolling them. And Catherine's like, "Stop eating that baguette in front of us, okay?" Like, she hits him at one point, which I appreciated. But this is why this challenge works. Like, the challenge itself is fine. Like, there's really no way for us to play along because we don't have like enough of like a steady look at the watch. So I think you're really just like studying them for like character building stuff, or at least that's how I felt watching this one. But Andy Cooper with the baguette, unbaguettable.
Yeah, I would agree. The last watch I owned, I think, cost something like $15 from Forever 21. So I am not much of an expert on fancy, expensive watches or why they are fancy or expensive.
I had one of those I forget what they were called, G-Shocks? Were they a G-Shock watch back in the day when I was a youngin'? They were like gigantic. It was like the size of a golf ball on your wrist.
Okay.
I looked very, very cool.
I'm sure it was cool at the time.
It's important to point out that I was a very cool child at the forefront of all fashion frontiers.
Yeah. Put that right on the believable fact list.
Does Josh Wigler believe this to be true?
Did you also wear like really, really wide leg jeans?
Yes.
Is that the era?
Of course.
Don't hate on JNCO jeans.
There was a period of time, it's called ninth grade, where every day, every single day, no matter what else I was wearing, I had to have a sleeveless fleece vest on. Yeah, I had a black sleeveless fleece vest on my t-shirts, on a button-down shirt, on a sweatshirt. It didn't matter. I had a sleeveless fleece vest.
Okay, you know, we're only a few years apart in age. There was no point in time when we were in middle or high school where that was cool.
See, we have the perfect age distribution on this podcast because I'm 5 years older than Josh, mm-hmm. who is 5 years older than Zed. Yeah. So every pop culture reference we have is completely incomprehensible to everybody else.
All All right. Sound off. Mole Patrol at robiswebsite.com. If you too wore a fleece vest every single day in ninth grade, they have to find someone to translate for them. They find this. They come up to the first guy who's like, yeah, I speak English. And then they explain to him what they're trying to do. We're playing a game. It's a very fun game. And then the guy's like, no habla English. Like, he shuts down completely. But he clearly understood everything. He's like, I'm not getting involved.
It's in like, that. Oh, not very English.
That's very French.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's very French thing to do.
No habla English is a very French thing to say. and they finally get one guy who like they yoink away from his midday feast of I didn't see any shrimp cocktail on that table, so it must have been a pretty low end restaurant. And he helps them find a place that knows a place that has a Cartier watch. And they go and like, there's also this thing. So Charlie's in town, right? Like Charlie's just like, isn't there like a scene where Charlie's like sneaking around and looking at a van?
Oh yeah. He sneaks into the production van.
What's he doing? Trying to get a granola bar. What is this?
Survival. And I love that they show this. This is fantastic. And then they show production yelling at him.
Yeah, they don't like
it. Well, it's an Anderson voiceover, right? Being like, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah, is this Charlie stealing fizzy lifting drinks? Now they're going to be washed and sterilized, and he gets nothing.
Yeah, great, Joe.
Yeah. So they find Anderson Cooper, and there is this incredible shot that is just like going up the stairs as Anderson Cooper is sitting there, double watches, nothing cooler. If wearing one Cartier watch is cool, imagine two.
You can only pull that off if you're Andy Coops. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. Like if you've got two, I think even if it's one real and one fake, that's got to be cooler than just the one real Cartier watch.
There was a time in the 80s when people would wear multiple watches on their wrist. You know, like going up the arm.
It's true. It would have been great if he like got up to be like, all right, so which watch is, oh, and he like trips over his own baguette and falls and like his watch cracks on the ground and there's gas.
Oh,
everywhere.
No.
They point that one. So they pick the watch. And this is when Anderson Cooper informs that, okay, sweet. So we're going to go to a shooting range. We're going to hang both of these watches onto targets, and the sniper on our team is going to put a bullet. His words.
Why?
Gonna put a bullet in them. This is over the line. This is just too grand.
We had feedback from John Krause who said, considering that this show aired pre-9/11, it's really weirdly violent. We have executions, kidnappings, fake torture, people sniping watches and making them explode, and more.
And like, I was going to say, at least it's green gack that explodes. But if they had gotten the wrong watch, it would have exploded into a bloody hail of mist. It would have been like very visceral and gory.
It's all brutal that there's no like neutral box, right? Either you earn $20,000 or you lose $20,000. You can't just be like, we don't know, we abstain. Leave both of the watches alone. We like them both. They're both beautiful pieces of jewelry that tell time functionally.
Branding the King Solomon option.
Yeah. The stakes are high.
Yeah.
You get it right or either way, one of these watches is going to die. And I don't want to say they chose the right watch because I feel bad for this poor watch that explodes into a huge spray of green gack, but at least they get $20,000. They're slightly mitigating the faux pas in the search for Steven and his iron mask.
I did think of a neutral box option here. You get $20,000 in the pot, or one of you keeps the watch.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. But it's the watch is you don't know it's filled with gack, so someday you will trip over a baguette and pay the price.
That's really funny to me.
Yeah. Later that night, it's dinner time. Wendy and Afi are tight. They're both singing songs. Is she the mole? And that's great. And that's wonderful. And it's sad that this friendship is short-lived on the show. But these are the two who are like super best friends in real life. Is that right?
No, it's Wendy and Jen who ended up going into business together.
Afi is the future doctor. Afi is the one who shows up on Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So it ends well for Afi. I liked this moment. It was cute. But then I was like, oh, this is emotional content. Someone's in danger. One of these two people is in danger. All right. The leaders and the followers meet Anderson Cooper in this clandestine way. It is this shadowy, empty stretch of road in the middle of nowhere, otherwise known as the French cornfields. It's midnight in the French cornfields, which sounds like a investigative journalist podcast that we should start.
Or a Magic Treehouse book.
Yes. The French cornfields. And the challenge is this. So the leaders are going to have access to this sort of strange, like, bird's eye view of a hedge maze. And the followers are going to go through the hedge maze based on the leader's discretion. Here's the catch. There are temple guards.
Very Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Are we all here together on Legends of the Hidden Temple?
I was too old for Legends of the Hidden Temple, okay. But I know what you're talking about.
There's with your guide, Kirk Fogg. So there's two guards per maze, hench moles, and this goes poorly for everyone.
I feel like it's nearly impossible, right? Well, I mean, statistically, it's proven to be impossible. But the fact that there are two of them and only one of you makes me feel like if you're not a good runner, it doesn't matter if your guide is leading you the right way. They can hear you through the hedges, as testified by, I can't remember who, maybe Jen. All they got to do is keep running till they find you.
Yeah. It's terrifying. This is a real horror movie challenge.
Yeah, it's scary.
This is scarier than the Blair Witch Project challenge they did in Borneo.
I was about to say, you can tell what year this was made because there's so many nods to the Blair Witch Project. Yes. Like, even the confessionals they're doing are like they're sitting alone in the dark with the camera very tight on their face, like they're about to say, I'm so frightened.
I'm so scared.
Yeah, and then having like the first person camera where they're running and looking very terrified. This is also very Blair Witch. And I feel like that aesthetic informed so much reality TV in those first couple of years of the reality TV boom.
Yeah. Blair Witch was very influential in many, mm-hmm. many ways. I think its influence on reality television should not be overlooked. Cause this is very much of a piece with the found footage horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a ton of drama here because you do get to see the bird's eye views of the maze. And in every instance, it's fairly clear that the red circles are going to overtake the green circle. It's like, unless Jennifer suddenly finds like the Rocketeer's backpack, she's done.
Yeah, you would have to be able to run so fast that you could run around that little like backwards L shape towards the beginning and like draw both of the chasers towards you and then run around that and get out. And that's if everything else goes according to plan. I have no idea if I can't hear you, there's interference, I can't hear what you're saying is real or not.
Yeah, I had that question as well. Are they deliberately screwing up the broadcast quality, is that real? Is that faked? Is it somehow a mistake? They didn't test run this properly. They do say at the end in the disclaimer, there were some technical difficulties. Game sequences were edited for time, and due to technical difficulties, time was added to one test and an additional trial was allowed, but not shown in another test. This feels like the one where that would have happened.
Yeah, the additional trial has to have been that one, because how do you additionally trial the watches? Or
get us another GAC watch.
Yeah. A second person was put into a steel mask.
We read it the whole day in a different place.
Yeah, so it's definitely in here.
Yeah, it just feels impossible to me, because even if the mole is in one of those teams, all three teams completely failed.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close.
No. No, it was a disaster. Yeah. It was very, very fun to watch. Poor Charlie at first, who was the first to just get taken out. I was like, this is bad. My heart was kind of pounding when it gets into the weird slow-mo. And then the whole screen goes red. Yeah, it's like, you died. Very Resident Evil.
Yeah, it's very dramatic.
They all lose. Another test failed. Not a great track record for the gang so far. So what do they have in the pot at this point? I wish that they would refresh us on the show. They got everything last week, except they lost 10K. Is that right?
Because of the penalty.
Yeah. Yeah,
I feel like it's over $100,000 already. And I will say I've been rewatching other seasons as a distraction from my actual life.
Yeah.
And I've been rewatching a season where things are a train wreck pretty early, pretty consistently, but pretty early.
Oh, ABC.
Somebody asks. A contestant asks, is it possible that at the end of this, we owe you money? That's what totally they're doing. After two episodes, they have something $30,000 or $40,000. Yeah. They have not done well.
So Josh, don't go here, but on Wikipedia, they do keep a running tally of what the pot is. And at the end of episode two, the pot stands at $135,000.
And what was it in episode one?
In episode one, it was $115,000.
Great.
So
maybe the whole $20,000.
Yep. On the watch.
Thanks, Cartier.
Yeah, it was purely the watches.
Weirdest product placement ever.
Yeah. All right. So they all fail the hedge maze. You always think that, oh man, going in a hedge maze must be fun. That looks cool. No.
Not if people are chasing you.
No, it's not bad. It's not good.
Yeah, but that's good. Part of the mystery, danger, espionage aesthetic of the whole show is
it's so cheesy.
People are out to get you.
It's so cheesy and so extremely my shit.
Yeah, because you are committed to the bit.
Yes.
And
yes.
This show is the definition of committed to the bit.
It's great. It's great. I was upset. So after they fail the test, they have dinner and they are not eating shrimp cocktail and maraschino cherries.
I
didn't see any Andy's mints. They have potato cakes and duck breast, which I guess looks fine.
Latkes?
If they were latkes, they were somewhere between latke and
the potato cake.
It's like a croquette.
Yeah, well, no, it was like a mound of mashed potato that looked lightly griddled.
So sort of like a giant tater tot.
Listen, friends, I'm on the Top Chef podcast.
Listen, I am a Jewish person who has lived in Spain, I understand what a latke is, and I understand what a croqueta is.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Well, let me see if I can pull it back up. I'm pretty sure it's this weird, it's this fat potato cake.
Josh, are we doing a Crunchy Mouse Sound spinoff now where we have to eat something was on the show?
Yeah, I'm pretty here for doing a Crunchy Mouth Sounds of potato cakes from the mole.
They're 18 years old, Josh.
Well, no, I would like to imitate the
So I did send us down a whole separate rabbit hole of Israeli snacks as crunchy or not crunchy mouth.
That's true. All right, hold on. I'm pulling up the scene where they're all going to be sitting down to dinner in just a moment. Right now, they're all wallowing. Okay, we're back to Chateau de Rochegude.
They've gone back to the chateau.
All right, they've got little dinner rolls, and then they have a thing of duck breast, some red wine. Slow down, everybody. I need to see the potato cakes. I swear they exist.
This is some Mandela effect BS.
The potato cakes may have just been of my imagination. I do think they are just
I just don't understand what that means. I understand a lot of different forms of potato foods, especially I'm also from the Midwest. So
all you eat is potatoes.
If potato cake isn't real,
it's not a thing,
and we should make it.
Well, here's a thing that people do sometimes,
potato cakes.
No.
Text me if there are such things as potato cakes.
Pancakes.
Potato, you see people do this on Iron Chef all the time, where you have a semi-soft potato thing and you put it inside like a ramekin or something and then upend it so it's in a little cylinder. Could that be what you saw, Josh?
Emily says, I can't hear you. You must type. Okay, let me type. Here we go.
We're really committed to this bit.
Yeah. Well, this is
important. That's Josh's middle name. Potato for my cakes. Bit on.
Are they real?
Joshua committed to the bit wiggler.
Real? Exactly.
Oh, she did hear me because she says, "Are there potato cakes?" It's like, yeah, no, it is exactly what I said.
There are potato pancakes.
Yes, of course. Oh yeah, so she's saying like a lock. All right, so the chef is out on. Yes, on
thank
my
you,
turn.
Emily and I, who have never met or spoken, are on the same team.
Yeah, same team. Well, I'd like to make a potato cake that's like really griddled on the tops and bottoms, and then very fluffy in the middle. That doesn't sound good.
No, that sounds delicious, and you can come to my house, or I will come to your house.
Yeah,
and we can eat them.
Let's make potato cake.
This is a thing. I am
not allowed to be friends.
I am googling this right now, and this is totally a thing.
Emily makes stuffing. She just reminded me of this. That is mostly potato based, and so that's basically what I'm thinking of. But it is lumpy and filled with bread and Thanksgiving spices.
I haven't eaten all day, and you're making me really hungry.
I'm so sorry. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the episode. Let's wrap it up because we also have to take a quiz.
Yeah, we have to take the quiz.
All right. So fancy dinner. They're not eating shrimp. They are not eating potato cakes. It's mashed potatoes and duck. It still looks very good. It's no lamb shank and bread. Everybody starts going through their list of who they think the mole is. Steven has the line, "What better mole than your friendly neighborhood grandma?" Who are you talking about? Are you shading Kate?
You sure?
Yeah.
Is? Trash.
He totally is.
Trash. Henry thinks maybe it's Jennifer, but the fact that she was reacting as big as she was reacting, that she ran off, maybe she was just trying to like take off the heat and attract some attention. Jim thinks it could be Catherine because she's smart. I'd say right now Catherine is one of my number one suspects on the board as well. Charlie and Steven just both mutually like shower each other in praise during this, like the who's the suspect scene. It's like the meme of like no one, actually no one. Charlie and Steven. I like Charlie and Steven. Like, that is not the question on the board, folks. Not the question on the board.
Oh, the cops like each other? What a surprise.
Oh, surprise. Shocker.
Sorry. Not at all. Sorry. Shocker I don't the care. Century.
Yeah, Shocker that didn't century. Age well.
No. Cops supporting cops. They finish the quiz, and Anderson Cooper is like, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. You guys look terrible. You all look like you're going to throw up. You all look like Jennifer on the helicopter. You all look like you need to land this thing. Let's just do it. Some volunteers to go first. I like that we're shaking it up. Henry volunteers. Jennifer, Steven, they volunteer. All three of them are green. Catherine, also green. Afi, red alert. So there it is. It's Afi. Afi's going home. I'm sad. I liked Afi. I thought she was great. It's a good cast.
It is.
It's great.
I don't think I'd be sad to lose everybody. There are some people here who I would be okay to lose already.
Who do you want to lose, Josh?
I don't want to throw Steven under the bus after everything he's gone through already.
But he didn't
he's not adding
help.
Much. He just got put in an iron mask. I need to see more of him like bungling coded messages to people. I just need to see more. Need some more zhuzh from Steven.
But
nobody touched.
Let's go back to the interesting aspect of the show that someone brought up last week of like, it doesn't matter who you like or don't like or who you're rooting for or not rooting for. It is purely your own skill or lack of knowledge or whatever it is that determines whether you stay or go.
It's fair.
So like, yes, it does absolutely 100% suck that the first two people who went home, and I will bring this up, are people of color.
Yep.
A Mexican man and a black woman. But like, that's not actually anybody's fault. That's just what happened.
It's the game design.
Yeah, it's the game design. And I think to a far lesser degree than in Survivor or Big Brother or other games of this nature, far less does your personal identity come into play of how this all shakes out.
Like how like the results shake out. Because that can certainly factor into interpersonal dynamics. But
yeah,
100%. That doesn't factor quite as hard into who gets cut or executed, it would seem.
Yeah. I mean, there is the aspect of who are you sharing information with? Who are you not? How do you relate to those people? How do you not? But we see Wendy and Afi, right, creating this friendly relationship. And then Afi goes home because it doesn't matter that she has a relationship with Wendy. She did the worst on the quiz. Yeah. And that's not about personal demographics. That's just test results.
Yeah. I do think I wish that the quiz was better television. I like the fairness of the elimination mechanism. I don't love that. Like, I don't really know what's going on with it.
Later in future seasons, as someone reminded me, and as I've now witnessed in rewatching entire seasons of television in the last couple weeks, they will read out each question as it's taken, and you'll usually get some sort of comment from some random player of, well, in relation to, you know, this mission that we did, this person acted funny or whatever it is, or they'll give you a clip of, even if the question is like, who was like, in what position was this person sitting next to the host during this meal? You'll get a view of that so that you can look at where everybody was sitting and make a choice about it, which is, you know, we're in season one. They're figuring out the structure of how they want to do this. And I agree with you. The more we're able to play along with the players, the more interesting and the more fun it is.
I also hope that we get to see a little bit more of like what we're hearing about of like, Charlie's shared some information with me. I shared some information with him. Like, I understand like they need to keep us in the dark and like uphold the mystery element. But I want to see people trading notes. I hope that gets factored in more. Jess, am I going to be disappointed, or like, do people actually kind of like share a little bit about that as presented on television?
I think there's a bit more of that. Probably not as much as you would like.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any final thoughts on Afi, my friends?
I thought
the future doctor.
The future doctor. The once and future doctor.
Well. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
She's doing great.
But she was a nurse on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, so that's good. That's good. Number one, Anderstan just sent along a recipe for mashed potato cakes, by the way.
It's a real
number
thing.
Number one, Anderstan, for those who don't know.
I wonder who that is.
It's just the least. This is exactly what I was thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think maybe we have to do like a little tasty video of these.
Yeah, I think a little griddled pancake action. All right, so homework. Watch Leonardo DiCaprio, two of them, in The Man in the Iron Mask, and eat mashed potato cakes.
Yes. So before we close out, you guys ready to play the game?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, a game.
Got to play the game. Same game as last time or new game?
Same game as last time, because it's just a fun exercise, and I'm enjoying making up fake reality shows.
Yeah. I've heard from another human that I've podcasted with in the last several days that you may be getting a couple of question suggestions from a professional quiz master podcaster.
Yes. In fact, indeed, I want to give a shout out to AJ Mass, who submitted. He had an episode of his trivia podcast, Beat My Guest, where he had a bunch of these that he made up. So he gave me all his discards.
Amazing.
So we're using those.
What you don't know is that I am a patron of Beat My Guest. So the fix is in. I have not listened to much of anything.
I was about to say, consumer. I've been on Beat My Guest like three or four times at this point.
I was on the one time.
Yeah. Didn't go well for you.
I went poorly. I think I got 4 points.
Yeah. But you didn't have the worst record, because
I very deliberately aimed for a lost number.
Yes. Everybody does it on that show, though. Yeah. Like, that's a thing that people do.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's my influence, by the way, that's just rippling out. I would like to.
It's true. Because like you were the only one who watched Lost.
I think
the
it was
most
me,
popular show on television.
It was me and my friends from college, and I'm pretty sure that was it.
Is this the one where people got dropped in Mongolia and had to find their way home?
No.
That's okay. That's a different Lost. Okay. So here we go. The game goes like this. I'm going to read you the descriptions of four reality TV shows from the early 2000s. You are going to tell me which one of these is fake.
Okay. Zed, we're teaming up again.
Oh, God, please.
I think we're a squad. It's you and me versus the system. We're taking on the corruption here at the heart
very
of...
Very much against the system.
Yes.
You're raging against the machine, and I am the machine.
You are welcome to join me in raging against the machine.
Yes. That's what we're doing here.
All right, so first category this week, you thought you were doing one kind of show, but you were wrong.
Okay, so this is Tool Academy.
Kind of.
Well, Tool Academy, the premise was, just to bring it back to Tool Academy from a few weeks ago, is all of the tools are brought onto the show thinking that they're like, you're on The Bachelor, you're going to get showered in ladies, and you're going to be the man. And then, like, the logo of whatever fake logo they've been convinced that they're on explodes, and it reveals Tool Academy, and the host goes, you're all tools, and we're going to straighten you out.
Yep. It's exactly so you know this premise.
That's the genre. That's the genre.
That's the genre. Okay. Yeah. So option A was called The Family, and it aired in 2003 on ABC. And George Hamilton hosts this show in which 10 relatives move into a mansion and are waited on by household staff as they compete for $1 million prize. The winner is selected by a very secret board of trustees. But in a shocking twist, the board of trustees turns out to be the very household staff serving them.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds like a dream.
All right, option B. He's a Lady. This aired in 2004 on TBS and has aged extremely well. 11 men are selected to compete in what they think is a challenge called All-American Man. But when they arrive, they're told they must learn how to act and dress like their wives and girlfriends to compete for prize money.
Zed has literally shot across the room, cowering in horror at the prospect of this show. Headphones now being reinserted into their ears.
Well, I had to leave.
Yeah.
I had to back away. I had to leave.
Zed, it gets so much worse.
All I heard was the title of the show.
I
feel like that might be real.
I'm sure it was. I don't need to hear a description. I'm sure it was real.
Yeah.
Continue.
We're in more enlightened times now, thankfully.
Okay.
Not much more, but
a little
getting
bit
there.
Slightly, marginally.
All right. Option C, Cell Shock, aired in 2004 on the Travel Channel. Contestants believe they are competing on an amazing race style travel show, but when they reach their first destination, a tiny town in Slovenia, they're immediately arrested. How will they cope when production's hands are tied, they don't know what they've done wrong, and absolutely none of the locals speak English?
That is an incredible concept. That feels way too clever to be real.
100% agree.
Like, that is something that came from, like, the genius mind of Jessica Leese or AJ Mass or both.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Well,
I would watch that.
Hold up. You haven't heard option D yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Option D, For Love or Money, 2003 on NBC. A man dates 16 women unaware that the woman he selects as the winner has the opportunity to reject him for $1 million.
What a dream!
At the end of the show, when the winner rejected the man and took the money, she immediately began filming season 2 with 16 men, and the stakes were double or nothing.
I think that's real. I think Cell Shock is fake.
What do you say, Zed?
I think Cell Shock is fake.
Yeah, I think so also. I love the sound of that last show. I really hope that's a real thing that happened.
Well, you are correct. Cell Shock is fake.
Okay.
It was a joint effort between Paul Osselson and myself came up with this concept. And, you know, Travel Channel, call us.
Yeah,
we're here for you.
You know what's up. That was a very clever idea.
There was a show, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, that was like they locked people up and they had to figure out how to get out of the place that they were locked up in and then like escape a like compound or something. Do you remember this?
Prison Break.
Is that what it was?
Prison Break was a fictional show.
Yeah.
No, there was a reality
Prison Break his brother out of jail.
No.
So it was like an escape room, but a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were like three separate teams. It was like a pair of people and they would be locked up and they'd have to escape the thing they were locked up in.
That sounds real.
And I have not been able to stop thinking about this for the last several weeks. I have no recollection of what it was called, but
Kirk
it is
Clark.
Wild.
Someone summon Kirk Clark. He will know the answer.
Correct.
That's a Kirk Clark. Yeah. Yes. That's a Kirk Clark show. Ever I heard one.
Yes.
All right. So one final piece of trivia about For Love or Money, which maybe we'll have to do a rewatch of that when we run out of moles. The winning contestant, her name was Erin Brody, and she went on to marry Dr. Will Kirby of Big Brother fame.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was still possible to like springboard to some level of fame off of your reality TV appearance back in 2003.
Are they still married?
I believe so. Yeah, not bad. All right. So next, your next set of questions. This is a little bit less problematic. So I guess we've got that going for us. There are no
bars.
There are no men in drag played for laughs in this next set. So that is good. That's progressive. All right. This category is called Before They Were Stars. So our first show, America's Most Talented Kids, aired in 2003 on NBC. Host Mario Lopez and head judge Lance Bass preside over a talent competition designed to find the most talented child in America. Among its contestants, this show featured an 11-year-old Taylor Lautner performing martial arts stunts, as well as eventual American Idol champ Jordan Sparks.
Okay. That sounds like Taylor Lautner's origin story.
The show sounds familiar. I don't remember watching it or anything about it, but that sounds right.
It sounds like you springboard from that to Twilight to question mark?
Sure. I don't know what he's doing lately.
Not a lot. He dated
Taylor Swift.
He was going to star in Stretch Armstrong, the movie. It's true.
Why was that a movie? Because I don't believe that. That's fake.
It's not. Google it. Taylor Lautner, Stretch Armstrong. You will get results. Okay. I may have even written a few of those articles.
If you wrote them, how do I know you didn't make it up?
Did Josh Wiggler believe that Taylor Lautner was
there? That's the question.
Perception reality?
Yes.
Okay. Question two. All right. Option B. Wheel of Hits, 2002 on UPN, described as Name That Tune meets American Idol. This cast of wannabe rock stars were assigned classic songs from the titular Wheel of Hits and graded on their spontaneous performances. And eliminated in fourth place after he flubbed the lyrics to Earth, Wind & Fire's September was a pre-Maroon 5 Adam Levine.
What year? 2002?
Yeah.
No, that's fake.
How do you know that's fake?
It feels too late, right?
Yeah, no, he Maroon 5 was already a thing because I went to a Maroon 5 concert in 2002. You don't need to read the rest. That's the fake.
But I want to hear the
other. Yeah, I do want to hear the rest, but I'm pretty sure that's the fake.
Weird. Yeah, okay. All right, you're right. That one is fake.
Yeah!
I thought I'd pick a band that was shitty enough that none of you guys would.
I knew that concert was going to come in handy.
We're white enough to have liked Maroon 5.
You're cool enough that maybe you didn't.
2000s?
No, I was there. 2002, somewhere in like Farmingdale, Long Island.
See, I thought they didn't peak until at least like 2004.
Gotcha. This is why, look at how old
Josh was in 2002.
I was in that audience with my black sleeveless fleece vest on.
my gigantic golf ball sized watch. All right. Well, I'm late for a day job meeting. Do you want the two real ones?
All right.
All right. Well, yeah, I want to work for Diddy, 2008 VH1. Contestants, including eventual Orange is the New Black star Laverne Cox, compete for a chance to become Diddy's personal assistant.
Amazing.
They are judged by a panel of high-level entertainment execs as they participate in various quote-unquote hustles or sales and marketing-based challenges.
Okay.
Sounds like a capitalist nightmare.
Oh, yeah. But here's one of my favorite pieces of Before They Were Stars trivia, because this, I believe, I don't even think the whole series ended up making it to air, and it's kind of crazy. Although I watched some of the pieces that did, and I guess I understand why. But this show is called In Search of the Partridge Family. It aired on 2004 on VH1.
I remember this. Yeah, I do too.
I watched some of this. It's pretty bad. Aspiring actors and musicians.
I don't remember it as an origin story for anyone, though.
Oh, this is great, though. Aspiring actors and musicians competed for a role on an upcoming reboot of the Partridge Family. Winning the role of Lori Partridge was a 15-year-old singer by the name of Emily Stone, who would go on to become an Oscar winner.
Oh, no way.
Wow.
She is not good. I mean, the other person she's up against is worse, but they are not good. She's much better in other things I've seen her in. Like, she picked up the series Drive, I think, like, maybe 2 years later. Yeah. And it was sort of like one of those Lost clones, but it was like they were on this cross-country road trip, and she was great in that.
She has a great music number in The Lonely Island's pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping, in which I forget the name of her character, but she has like this hot single called Turn Up the Beef.
Wow.
And the refrain is Turn Up the Beef. I forget the rest of it offhand.
Wow.
Emily's probably on the other side of the door singing the rest. That would be my guess.
Yes. Okay. All right. Next up. Next steps for ex-survivors. So,
oh, no.
All right. We have On the Case with Dr. Sean, aired in 2002 on TLC. Dr. Sean Caniff visits hospitals and research facilities around the country and beyond as he explores a day in the life of various medical specialists and investigates medical mysteries.
I believe that would be that a thing.
Likely.
Yep.
All right. We have Cannonball Run 2001, aired in 2001 on USA. Unlikely teams of three across the U.S. race across the USA in a competition inspired by the coast-to-coast racing challenge depicted in the 1981 film The Cannonball Run. Among the contestants, Jeff Varner and Sue Hawk, who raced as a team alongside Temptation Island's Kaya Wittenberg.
That's real. I was a big Jeff Varner fan. I believe that is real.
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So option C, Combat Missions, aired in 2002 on USA, produced by Mark Burnett and hosted by Rudy Bosch. Combat Missions pitted four teams of military and law enforcement professionals against each other in physical, mental, and endurance challenges.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
It was, I believe it was Army, Navy, something, and SWAT. And I think the SWAT guy won. Spoiler alert.
Well, okay.
I referenced Combat Missions from time to time, and I wrote about it when I wrote the Rudy Bosch obituary for The Hollywood Reporter.
Ooh. Okay, then. And option D. Extreme Dodgeball, 2004 on GSN. Survivor Australia's Jerry Manthe served as the sideline reporter for the first season of this complicated and fast-paced adaptation of the classic.
Oh, this is tough. So I think, Zed, it's one or four. It's either Dr. Sean or Jerry.
I feel like Dr. Sean is more realistic.
But the timing on that. So 2002, Survivor airs in 2000.
It aired concurrently with Combat Missions.
Yeah.
I would watch both of those shows.
Yeah.
Currently, now.
I think the Dr. Sean one sounds real. I think Extreme Dodgeball is not, but I have a feeling we might get this one wrong. Do you want to, you make the call.
I'm pretty torn.
Do you want to rock, paper, scissors, shoot for it?
So
you'll represent Dr. Sean. If you win, we're going Dr. Sean is fake. And if I win, Jerry is fake. We go rock, paper, scissors, shoot at the camera and we shoot on the shoot.
Okay.
Okay, you ready? Here we go. Yeah. Just one. You ready? Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. So we're both scissors. Here we go. You ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. All right, I'm paper, I cover rock. Jerry is the fake.
Incorrect. It's On the Case of Dr. Sean.
Zay, you should have stuck with scissors. It's unbelievable.
I thought Dr. Sean was more likely to be real than Dodgeball, to be honest.
Yeah.
But he was on one of those like Entertainment Tonight / things. I think he was on Extra. Around this time?
That sounds right. I knew it was somewhere.
Of course.
Dr. Sean's 15 minutes lasted 90.
Well, everybody that was in that first season of Survivor was A-list for a year.
Yes.
But also Cannonball Run 2001, one of my favorites of this era.
Yeah. I don't believe I will revisit it.
Yeah, I don't think anything in that is going to be anything we want to see.
In the drawer.
All right. And finally, our final category this week is Fix It, Build It. So we have Catch It, Keep It from 2009 on the Science Channel. Engineers, special effects artists, construction workers, and other practical science-oriented folks team up to build a contraption that will protect a prize, such as a grill or an electric guitar, from being destroyed in a predetermined trap. If the prize survives, they win it.
What's the show called?
Catch It, Keep It.
Okay.
All right. We have Destroy, Build, Destroy. which aired in 2009 on the Cartoon Network. Andrew W.K. hosts this kids game show in which teams destroy a random object, build vehicles out of the parts, and then compete for a chance to destroy the other team's vehicle.
I mean, that sounds very in the spirit of Andrew W.K.
God, that's so stupid. It sounds so real.
Yeah, yeah.
And finally, we have two more. Right. Okay. So Stack the Deck, 2007 on the Discovery Channel. Professional poker player and notorious poker brat Phil Hellmuth hosts this card stacking competition in which teams of three have 2 hours to build a house of cards. Houses are tested by measuring height, durability, and an additional special challenge that changed every week.
There's just no juice in that premise. That is a show that's good for 4 weeks, if that.
Yeah, having seen that challenge on Survivor...
They didn't even use cards on Survivor.
It's a bad show to build.
Yeah. Well, finally, we have NASCAR Angels, which aired in 2004. It was syndicated.
Yeah, I'm sure.
NASCAR champion Rusty Wallace hosts this show and guides the NASCAR Angels Dream Team as they visit fans who drive vehicles on their last legs and get the cars back into top shape. The twist, they only have 3 days to complete the challenge.
I'm pretty stumped. I don't really know. I don't have any strong feeling anywhere, Zed.
I don't believe in the card house building.
Yeah, I would knock that down. Do you want to Michelle Fitzgerald kick that to the ground?
Like, these all sound terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't watch one of them. Maybe no. The one that's like build a device to protect your prize could be fun for a couple of episodes.
Read the description again, because it was like something in other professionals. Like,
oh yeah, the scientists.
Well, their talents.
I want to be clear that in order to make sure that the voice is consistent, all of these written descriptions are mine.
Sure.
The real ones and the fake ones. So
yeah. We're not quibbling with the writing. The writing is technically perfect.
You're great. And it's hilarious. And the 2000s were a nightmare that we all lived through. And now we're here really living through another nightmare.
Yeah. So this is Catch It, Keep It, 2009 on the Science Channel. Mm. Engineers, special effects artists, construction workers, and other practical science-oriented folks team up to build a contraption.
Special effects artists and other practical scientists.
Other practical science-oriented folks, right? That's the phrase? OPOS.
I mean, I have a BFA. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts, so who am I to disparage those of us who have gone into the more abstract arts of creating entertainment that you've all been enjoying for the last 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really funny description to me. That's
all right, so which one is fake?
I'm going to jump through the house of cards. I'm just going to destroy
it. It's the house of cards.
Yeah, I'm going to cannonball through the house of cards.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah.
And also, I want to say that Catch It, Keep It was probably my favorite reality show of the
decade. Yeah, that sounds like it's probably pretty fun.
Yeah, they'd have a team, and it would be like three guys that don't know each other, and one of them would be like a physicist, and one of them would be a construction worker, and one of them would be like a guy that builds robots, they'd have to team up to build the prize. And then they had this other guy who his whole job was like building Rube Goldberg traps. And so he would also build one, and they would see if his trap would also work. And he'd say, this is how I would solve the problem. And then they show the guys solving their problem. And then it was like, okay, now we're going to launch this barbecue grill through a catapult and you have to catch it. And it was wonderful. I'm still Facebook friends with the two hosts of the show.
Wow. You're so connected.
Yeah. Well, you know, people on reality shows accept everybody's friend requests. So
I have observed this to be mostly true.
Yes.
If you want to be friends with reality stars, it's definitely doable.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I got to work shade, on that, I guess.
No shade. Some of them are phenomenal humans without any irony whatsoever. Many who I would love to break potato cakes with.
Indeed. Yeah. So let's wrap this up, guys, because I'm 10 minutes late for a work call.
All right. Yeah. Nice. Oh, amazing. Here we go.
The
Mole is disrupting lives already here on the Mole Patrol podcast. Jessica Lease, that was fantastic. Brooklyn Zed, tremendous job on your third podcast ever. Coming in hot with the takes. And you now know what it's like to podcast with like the delirium terror of the world coursing through your veins.
Yeah, I kind of did that last week, but I definitely did it even more this week. Like,
You're doing great.
The world is a nightmare.
You're doing fantastic, and you're providing people with lots of laughs and joy. So hold your head up. You're doing really great work here on the podcast, in addition to On the Streets. I'm Josh Wigler. I like potato cakes and sleeveless black vests. And if you like those too, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ron Howard. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. Zed is at Hard Rock Hope. We are Mole Patrol. We will be back next week, season 1, episode 3. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.
Love you guys. Bye.